And welcome back to Law Abiding Citizen, the show where we break down the laws of the Turks and Caicos Islands so that every citizen understands not only what the laws say, but how it works in your daily life. I'm your host, Akira Misik, Member of Parliament, Leeward and Long Bay. And for all that is holy, and you probably won't believe it, I've been a lawyer in these islands for 20 plus years. Can you believe it? I don't look a day over 25. So as we were discussing in the last episode, we started at the beginning with the Constitution of the Turks and Caicos Islands. And we are going to continue today discussing some of the other rights and freedoms that is provided in Part 1 of our Constitution, which we call the Foundational Rights and Freedoms of the Individual. Last episode, we touched on the right to form a family, the right and the freedom of expression, the right to life, the right of protection of property, the right to a fair trial, and we introduced the concept that all of these rights are not absolute, but must be balanced against public safety, order, and the rights of others. We're going to delve a little deeper, because another fundamental right provided for in our Constitution is the right to not be subject to inhumane treatment and or slavery. Now, what does that mean? That simply means that if, for whatever reason, you fall afoul of the laws in these islands and you have to be arrested, you shall not be detained in a facility that is inhumane. What does inhumane mean? Could mean a facility where there's no capacity for you to relieve yourself and have a comfort break that is decent, clean, and accessible. Inhumane can also mean that you cannot be detained in a facility that doesn't give you an opportunity to have rest during the day, meaning you cannot be tied up, strung up, held up, and with a little black bag put over your head. It means that even though there may be subject interests of defense, public safety, public order, public morality, or in the administration of justice, a person must always be treated with inherent dignity and respect of their physical human person. It also means that juvenile offenders must be segregated from adult offenders in every possible manner and way. And they must be treated, if they are held in custody, in a manner that is appropriate to their age and their understanding. In a nutshell, if you are a 15-year-old girl who's been arrested and charged with an offense, you shall not be held in the general population of the prison whilst on remand. You should be provided an opportunity to clean your person, provided an opportunity to have meals, provided an opportunity to seek rest when it is necessary. It is in that regard that we must ensure at all stands as a country, as a state, that we treat people humanely, especially if it's the state that is restricting their liberty, which is just a fancy constitutional word for movement, choice, and design. And as we said, you have a freedom of not being enslaved, meaning that if you work, you should be paid and paid responsibly within the confines of any labor laws that govern the islands. That basically means that in the creation of our employment laws with minimum wage, no person shall be forced or compulsed to conduct labor. Now, there's a qualification in that. And as Section 4 of the Constitution provides, for the purpose of this section, forced or compulsory labor does not include the following. Because as we said, even though these rights are inherent, some are qualified. They apply to all of us, but not in every situation. So restrictions on forced and compulsory labor definitions include any labor required in consequence of a sentence or order of the court. So if you are subject to a custodial order that also provides a community service element attached to it, whether you want to or not, if part of the community service program is that you have to go and weed the public cemetery in Grand Turk, that is not deemed forced or compulsory labor, and that would be allowed. Another exemption would be any labor required of a member of a disciplined force and pursuant of their duties as such, or in a case of a person who has conscientiously objections to service in a naval, military, air force, any labor that person is required by law to perform in place of such service. What does that mean? Well, very simply, if you have signed up for any of the armed forces in the island, whether that's the regiment or the police, there are restrictions on what would be deemed force or compulsory labor. If your sergeant requires you to walk the beat for the entirety of your shift and you don't want to do it, it's not considered force or compulsory labor. It is part of the job that a disciplined force must provide in these islands. Now, other restrictions which would not be deemed force or compulsory labor, and we've had this very recently through our COVID matters as well as our recent curfew restrictions that have been placed in the islands, cites any labor required during a period of public emergency or in the event of any other emergency or calamity that threatens the life or well-being of the community to the extent that the requiring of such labor is reasonably justified in the circumstances of any situation arising or existing during that period or as a result of that other emergency or calamity for the purposes of dealing with that situation. An example of this would be during our COVID restrictions, that was deemed a public emergency. A certain class of person was deemed essential. The essential class included our armed forces, being our police officers, regiment, and anyone that provided public safety and protection. It also included our nurses and doctors around the islands because, A, it was a medical emergency that the country was suffering under, and albeit the hours may have been longer than what is normally contracted for, the Constitution provides in those instances persons can be compulsed and required to work. Even if you are compulsed and required to work during that time, you are required to be compensated. So those are examples of when forced or compulsory labor could be required and carved out of the exemption that a person shall not be held in forced labor in the islands. Now we are going to move on to a topic that has garnered a lot of discussion and a lot of agreement from some in the public, because they feel that they're not having full access and rights to this opportunity. This takes us to Section 12 of our Fundamental Rights and Freedoms. This is a protection of right to education. Now, I know in some corners it is viewed that education is free, and I am going to read to you exactly what the Constitution says so that we can all walk hand in hand in this regard. Section 12.1.2 provides every child of the appropriate age, as provided by law, shall be entitled to receive primary education, which shall, subject to subsection 3, be free. The Constitution provides access to primary education at no expense. Let's take that in. That does not include secondary, that does not include tertiary. Now, through the education ordinance, this is further broken down to how parents and students can access education. And because this protection is provided in the Constitution, the subsequent legislation must abide by the terms of the Constitution. So what is also provided for in Clause 12 is that every person who is a parent or legal guardian of a child shall be entitled to have his or her child, of whatever age, educated at his or her expense, unless a law otherwise provides. In a private school, that is to say, a school other than one established by a public authority, and in such a school to ensure the religious and moral education of his or her child in accordance with his or her own convictions. What does that mean? In very simple terms, if you are a hardcore Anglican and you want your child to attend an Anglican-based school, the Constitution gives you the freedom to do so. If you want your child to attend a non-religious-based school, and it is private, the Constitution gives you the freedom to do so. What the Constitution provides is that you, as the parent or legal guardian, have the right to decide how and where your child would be educated, but you do not have the right to decide whether or not your child shall be educated, as the Constitution requires all children under a certain age or of the appropriate age based on the education ordinance, which we will get to in later episodes, to be formally educated through a system, whether it's a public school, a private school, or in some nuances, homeschooling program. We must also note that nothing in any law or done under its authority shall be held to contravene subsection 3, which is the right of a parent to decide whether or not they want to place their child in a private school, subject to the extent that it's reasonably justified in a democratic society, and to the extent that the law in question makes provision requiring private schools as a condition of their being allowed to operate and on the terms no more onerous than are applicable to schools established by a public authority. And the minimum standards that are required that the Constitution gives the Ministry of Education to introduce for the registration of private schools is a minimum educational standard, including and related to the qualifications of the teaching staff and other staff as may be prescribed by the education ordinance, and such minimum standards imposed in the interest of public order, public morality, or public health as so may be prescribed. In a nutshell, that means the Ministry of Education through the Department of Education, on reviewing the registration of a private school, is able to set the minimum standards in qualifications for its teaching staff and ensure that the curriculum being followed or provided by that private school meets the minimum standards of the public and national expression and curriculum. So, we understand the challenges that our public schools are reaching a capacity point, especially here in the island of Providenciales. And we must acknowledge that the Constitution, as written, provides an opportunity for primary education to be free to those students, and primary only. Now, I'm not going to give my personal view on this, but I was a Minister of Education, and I left with secondary education and tertiary education also being free. So I think that is a very clear indication of what my view is when it comes to educating the youngest citizens and residents of these islands and at what expense. Now we're going to move on to a right and freedom that many people are not aware of, but one that I also think is very, very important. And it's one that's going to ensure that future generations get to enjoy what God has given us in these islands. And that is the right for the protection of the environment. So this one isn't a personal right that's given to you, but this is an obligation on the government and the legislature, aka the parliament. And it cites as follows. The legislator and the government shall, in all their decisions, have due regard to the need to foster and protect our environment that is not harmful to the health or well-being of present and future generations, while promoting justifiable economic and social development. The environment is so important, and we have to ensure that whilst we are building a country, that we must do so in a sustainable way, not to the detriment of the natural environment that keeps us as protected as we are. So that means that when government and developers are meeting at the table, the concept of the environment is a paramount protection provided in the Constitution that they must ensure they address their minds to. And so the Constitution expressly states that the government and Parliament should adopt reasonable legislative and other matters to protect the built heritage, the wildlife, and the land and sea biodiversity of the islands, that limit pollution and ecological degradation, promote conservation and biodiversity, and secure ecologically sustainable development and use of natural resources. Simple terms, you can't build up the island, have no green space, because when it rains, the entire island is going to continue to flood. It also means that we must ensure that our natural areas of mangrove protection has the necessary protections in place so that our shoreline doesn't disappear. We must ensure that we do not allow unlawful dumping of waste into our oceans, into our waters, that can damage our underwater sea life, kill our corals. This means we should not continue overfishing if that is in play. It also means that we should not fill in unnecessary wetlands for the development of large-scale developments on the island, because that is going to affect the biodiversity and the ecological makeup of these islands. It is a delicate balance that government and the legislature must strike, because whilst we must ensure that we have economic stability for the people of these islands, we must also ensure we have ecological sustainability for these islands in using our natural resources. Constitution and our preamble also provides, because sometimes I know we say the government is unfair and the department has done this to us and we can't get no recourse and my MP isn't this and this and that. The Constitution provides you an opportunity that any decision and act of the government and any person acting on its behalf must be lawful, rational, proportionate, and procedurally fair. What does that mean? It means that decisions and policies being introduced by government must A, comply with the laws of the land, must not conflict with the Constitution, must not introduce laws that conflict with the Constitution. It must also be rational. What does rational mean? Is it genuinely necessary to solve a problem that may be there? Or can another solution be found? It must be proportionate. Proportionate is a fancy legal word to mean it must make sense. Do we take a hammer to a nail problem, or do we address a concern in a suitable fashion that solves the issue there? And it must be procedurally fair. Procedurally fair is why you would see any amendments to legislations tending to have a transitional clause in them in order to grandfather those who may have benefited before the amendments in, because whilst the parliament is the supreme body that makes the laws, which we'll get into in later episodes, we must ensure that we do not breach our own constitution by the introduction of those laws. So if you feel that your interests have been adversely affected by a decision or an act of the government, you have the right to request and be given written reasons for that decision or act. And that's Section 19(2) of the Constitution. So if any decision you feel is unlawful in your regard, was irrational in your regard, was disproportionate in your regard, and procedurally unfair, you have the ability to seek clarification and written reasons for why that decision was made. And again, in later episodes, we would touch on the ombudsman and the institution of good governance that has the ability to an oversight of the administrative actions of government as it comes to what citizens feel has happened to them. It's a lot, but we're getting there. In a nutshell, we have in our Constitution those rights and freedoms. And as we've shared earlier, the concept of the rights and freedoms is there to ensure that every person living here have a codified attempt. Well, not attempt. Attempt would be the wrong word. That every person has a code that they are able to live by, and one that the government must also live by, and the judiciary, and the parliament, and when they are working and dealing with persons. Each right is qualified because national security would trump all of them. Each right is qualified because my rights are no more important than my executive producer's rights. But it gives us a clear foundation as to our country's legal system through our Constitution. We also would appreciate that there are mechanisms for these rights to continuously be championed through the various institutions of good governance, that if any of these rights are quote-unquote trampled on, there are provisions for you to A, get information as to why the decision was made, and B, to file a constitutional motion for the breach of the Constitution against the state. We as citizens and residents and general lovers of the Turks and Caicos Islands must understand that everything is not a free-for-all and that we are all obligated to be the best citizen, resident, and islander as we can be. And the Constitution opens with those opportunities for you to ensure that you have a right and protection in various avenues. Life, liberty, security of your person, and the protection of the law is the ethos of our Constitution. The freedom to form consciousness, express yourself, assembly, and associate is your right to have ideas, to form community, and to express yourself. The protection of your privacy, your family life, your home, and your property, not to be deprived from you, save in the public interest and for fair compensation, provides that you have the right to build a life that you want to live. But in building that life that you want to live, you cannot do that to the detriment of others, to the detriment of national security, and to the detriment or in breach of the laws of the land. And so, friends and followers, that is our rights that is provided to us by our Constitution. And as we said in the beginning, the purpose of this podcast is really to give you, the citizen, an idea of the laws and understand not only what they say, but how they work in your daily life. Now we're going to move on to the three bodies that we have created by our Constitution. So I hope you'll join me in the next episode as we delve into the institutions: the governor, the cabinet and premier, the House of Assembly, judiciary, and our independent good governance institutions. As we emphasize, friends and listeners, the Constitution is not just about a list of rules, but it's really about protecting every citizen, resident, and islander's rights to ensure that your government is accountable, and it gives us a framework for self-rule. We are delving deeper and deeper to ensure that every person who has an opportunity and an interest in this area knows exactly the framework for which we are governed under, and the abilities and the awesome responsibility that we have of being islanders. As we get ready to touch on the power is divided, or how power is divided between the governor, the elected government, the judiciary, and the independent institutions, we will really get to see why it matters, how the safeguards of your rights as a citizen is in play, and what really the roles and responsibilities of those independent institutions have in securing and protecting you. Join me next time as we delve deeper. This is Akira Misik signing off this week for Law Abiding Citizen, the show where we break down the laws of the Turks and Caicos Islands so that every citizen understands not only what the law says, but how it works in your daily life. Take care now. See you soon.